Anything you would like to ask or share or say?
There's consensus. And it's the thing you feel most kind of like self-conscious about, or the thing that people call you out on. It's this terrible combination of all too visible and private hell. And I think I just really don't believe, when it comes right down to it, that in meditation or in life, I wouldn't, or we wouldn't, or people I know would, my friends, family, wouldn't it be better, you know, better off if they could, like, deal with this thing. Mm. It's really hard for them. So, the farthest I've gotten with it, I think, is just some feeling of, yeah, and that's, isn't that everyone, and like me, that person, this person, that person is tormented by the same things, but it still doesn't really make a dent in this idea that, yeah, but still, I really want to not be that way, mm-hmm. and I really don't want to have this get in the way of my meditation.
Mm-hmm. Could you hear? So there's a few things that come to mind. And one is the power of willingness. And rather than like being out at the level of the twigs and trying to prune, cultivating willingness to be changed. Mm-hmm. That the change that goes on could be like surfed or whatever. Towards transformation. What I also wonder about is not only the flaw, to use your word, that we're aware of, and so is everyone, which maybe isn't the case for every single person, that there's something like that, but the flaw that we're not aware of. So sometimes I wonder if the flaw that one is so aware of in oneself is a bit of an occupation that helps me be not so willing to grok, to ascertain, to feel something even more deep in the structure. And I do find that willingness, it grows in love, friendliness. And that's one of the things that I had in my notes for today is, if we go back, I wanted to go back to what Meredith said yesterday when I was asking for an example of a craving, and she was like, yep, I got one. Yes. But what a beautiful example that you gave. And especially because it was so easy to feel in that example of craving something wholesome and something unwholesome. Just really, the way you said it was very simple. That clearly there's missing community. And then, of course, something gets off track, something gets off track, something gets off track. And then it's like being hungry for such and such a mineral, but what's around is different kinds of chips. Shahar today was talking about the American phenomenon of she was like, but how do people decide which chips to buy? And we were laughing about, like, corn chips is something, like, in Spain and Israel, you have to really go to a special store to find, like, one brand of corn chips. How do you decide? But it, kind of like, we feel that there's a need for something, but we don't feel capable of feeling what it really is. And so looking at what chips are available is already so occupying. What entertainment shall I give myself? What would be fun? Or what would give me some sense of, we're not sure quite what, but something around connection or love or joy or whatever. And I think that even the micro judgment must let much less a macro judgment. So sitting there watching the movie and it's vapid. And how easily that is, I'm so stupid to be doing this again. Here I am doing it again. And I know I'm going to do it tomorrow. So it feels like even a micro judgment kind of puts me enough out of touch with the actual feeling and situation of what is really missing. And I feel it's missing, and it is missing. But just enough out of touch with that, that then it's on repeat. And whether that's more like just simply judgment, or more like shame, or embarrassment, or guilt, it feels like it's enough of a disconnect from the actual situation. And what I have noticed that some of the worst behavior that I've seen from people comes when we feel guilty about something we know we did wrong. It's kind of a phenomenon. And so there's a level where we would talk about our willingness, and we would feel conscious of our willingness, and we would like to be willing to do whatever is needed, whatever is needed, whatever is needed. But when it comes to, like, that really subtle small thing that's so hard, and why should it be so hard, we're not willing in practice. In theory, we might be. And so maybe it's helpful to go via theory, via theory at first, like to talk myself, like, I am willing to do whatever, whatever it would take for whatever, to be happy or to be free or to be really feel safe. Let's take three good examples. Or to feel juicy connection with people or with a person. And what if what's needed is just a 5-minute pause before turning on the television. And even the television's already on, so what? Like, it's still, like, the subtle thing that's needed, it doesn't actually care if the television is on or not. I mean, there is the phenomenon of the television having its hypnotic effect, and that's hard to practice with sometimes, but...
Would you not give any
the subtle shift could be, I'm watching the rom-com, mm-hmm. and I'm not even enjoying it. Because it's like I could write a better script, you know. wait. And while I'm feeling it, I could notice how the judgment is keeping me from really feeling, dropping into myself. And I'm scared of dropping into myself because there's some misery or heartache. And also, there's usually some like, yeah, animals, I'm fine. I'm good. Got, like you said, I go surfing every morning. I love surfing. It's my thing, and I do good work, and I'm good at it. And I have community there, and I have community there. What's the big deal? So just dropping a little more in touch where it might hurt, and that might not be all we are. It might also be fine, and it might rock your world in like the earthquake kind of way, but it's probably just going to be a little, you know, slime mold kind of movement, like not very far, just the mind opens a little bit and there's that person I've been meaning to call, or, you know, what if I just take the guitar out of the closet or put the paint stuff on the draft table or make some food from scratch. And that's actually going to take an hour. Just so many different things that could be... So, because it's not just community, it is community with people, but it's also just, if we can think about it either as community of life, community with even the past, like, that food, making food takes time, like, community with reality. And even if I'm alone, whatever kind of food from scratch. So that could even be a little bit of a helpful strategy, like thinking of what could I make a little bit less convenient? If that might help me be more in touch, more in the community with reality. It's really deep, the movement toward convenience. I didn't go very far into it yesterday, but... Like, where it all start kind of apparently seems to have started from about 10,000 years ago. That's really about slavery and dominance and considering hard labor to be something that is beneath, that is a takedown of dignity, is a loss of status. And you know, the craziness that it would have dignity to enslave someone else to do that work. May or may not be actually needed, part of the community with reality. It might be just about having extra from fear. What were you going to say before? can't pin?
Can't win.
Can't win. Does the rom-com help? So I think that it's not either or. And I do think that many lives are, there's a conundrum. And there's a couple, there's so many important things that are close together, hard to have a talk in sequence about all of them. So let's just say, like, if we think of the flaw, if it exists, if that is a true perspective, probably there's something that's involved in that so-called flaw, let's just say there's something involved in that so-called or seeming or definite flaw that's part of our not just uniqueness but richness somehow. And so the either or approach of either wanting to completely tame with a plan, with an envisionable outcome or ending of the story of getting rid of my flaw, it's gonna probably come about so differently from what we would envision. So I don't know if anyone, it's probably maybe too tender for anyone to say what your big flaw is. But maybe you could feel, if you have a feeling for what you think it is or what your friends think it is. Or and it may or may not be what Katoriji is speaking about. Because sometimes it's only with the lifetime experience and a lot of willingness for clarity that you have the perspective you have now. But the approach that it's not just a simplistic thing necessarily that I can plan out from before starting and then get it over with. Take out the tumor. It's not the only way, but the one small important way that not being perfect is helpful. And I've noticed this in small and big ways where something will go wrong. So this is a small way. Something will go wrong one day that's kind of like, it feels out of the blue, like could be anything from a sore throat to a fight with someone or something going wrong with some scheduling or whatever. And then it'll turn out that the people that I happen to meet that day, it's relevant. And it's helpful for me to have the grounding in like the actual lived experience of scheduling going wrong. That's not the end of the world, but it sucks. Or it also sucks and leaves openings for unexpected, unforeseen events that also came along that day. Okay, cool. Thank you.
It's something that my family would probably call selfishness. My friends might call just exasperating self-absorption. And that I would call in myself, like, why do you keep thinking about yourself all the time?
Yeah, it's so helpful to have an example. Thank you. And since I know Katoriji for many years, it's also I can give also specific response example. Yeah. And it's so, to me, similar to that, the craving for rom-com. Where there is a real craving, there is some conversation that could go on some deeper level that we're not quite in. And so we're going to the movement to the rom-com instead of some other being moved in a way that would kind of hit home or bring us home. And I don't want to forget to continue the response to that surfing and family gap. I'm assuming it's surfing that's over here and needs a coast. Yeah. So with Katorji's example of being called selfish by herself and others and self-absorbed and self-centered, and the way that the judgment brings it around in a disconnected and somehow repetitive, like not going deeper kind of way. And what deeper could be is that there is something about coming to yourself and being yourself that radiates, that gives, which is you, rather, not everybody. But part of your, I think, part of your way is like, yeah, be really, really selfish.
Yeah, that's the route, right? It's like, so the solution is to be more selfish than the
so-called.
That's only going to...
What is the self? What is the self? And what is an occupation with... an ingrown toenail phenomenon, mm-hmm. through judgment and guilt and blame, mm-hmm. to not be in touch. So I would have said more the absenteeism.
That's what I mean.
Is what's going on. Mm-hmm.
Can you flesh that out a little bit? I missed the jump to absenteeism.
That's just because I know her a long time. But it's also just visible in the past. If the visible flaw is about self-centeredness, supposedly, then in what level of self is there involvement that's visible? And is that an avoidance of some deeper radiant heart?
Also known as self.
And part of the cure is what helps you be valiant in the face of criticism, mm-hmm. from others, including the voices of others inside you. And what is that feel like, the hiding in the cloud of criticism and the soreness of receiving criticism and being occupied in being sore from criticism? That it makes it very cloudy and hard to see what self draws me inward and whole. And it's not that that's the only aspect of your path, but I think it could be an only way to where come to what radiates into touch with the world. It has. Yeah. I liked the word valiant.
Valiant is a good
word. And it's
like a warrior.
And it comes from alignment. Yeah. And it value. I don't know if it's related to value, but I feel so. Even if it isn't, but like, what's valuable? What gives everything value? Mm-hmm. And who is deciding, and who's the goldsmith or whatever? Mm-hmm. Who knows what's gold and what isn't? Mm-hmm. And what's better than gold, really, and shinier than gold? And so the surfing over here, family over there, also gives a chance to talk about the way that things aren't perfect. Mm-hmm. Helps us go deeper. So, and one way of going deeper would be like, what happens for you in surfing that you love? What is it about surfing that you love? And what is that feeling in you that you love that happens when you surf? And starting to like just incrementally let that creep into the rest of your life, that you're surfing in other situations. And then when you're with family, that if that feels more round or more warm-hearted or whatever, more heard, or then that feeling. And so you get to have the amoeba shift from two sides, mm-hmm. coming towards towards a non-separation, which is not only in the feeling realm, the inner world, but different solutions will start coming to mind, and also will present themselves to you, will happen, and possibly more likely be recognized. More likely, oh, I'm under a ladder. When it's not as much the sense of that break and gap that has emphasis, but the what I love about family is this. And the love of that is not some twist in me that I just made up to make myself suffer. It's somehow like a given. And similarly with surfing. And I think it's important to maybe accept the challenge not as a punishment or an impossible task or something where you made a mistake somewhere back there and now you're stuck with this, but that the challenge is somehow I don't know if it's going too far to say kind of like if you have the challenge, you're up for it. But at least there, it's not necessarily a punishment. But, and, sorry, not but, and, you're kind of... I don't know why the word reeking is coming, like not reeking in a bad way, like through really hard effort, reeking a path, reeking open possibilities, that if your family lived next to the best surfing beach in the world, just wouldn't come up, and that's not a blessing that it wouldn't come up. And I, maybe you know people who just, they got everything, it's so easy for them, and they're just kind of like a little shallow. I mean, really, just that it's a little bit along the lines of the convenience thing, when things come too easily, when we're not kind of required to suffer a lot or crack open to some other ways, we don't. And that is an invitation to grow our willingness, which, you know, let our sensitivity come to the willingness. So the sensitivity not only to the responsiveness, away from reactivity to responsiveness, but the sensitivity to, even though right now there's nothing to be done, but the willingness, which I think is like a love of aliveness, love of openness, all the words we had yesterday, great mystery, etc. Just a love for no reason. So that we're not just waiting to get kicked in the butt. And I think this is also part of our negative self-image as humankind. That also goes way back to the, if it's true, I mean, I don't know exactly. They talk about around 10,000 years ago, a shift towards more like domination of other people to then do the so-called dirty work. The possibility that our highest calling is to be moved fully for no reason that we, you know, for no motive, not to cause some effect that we want. To be moved, to be inspired, to be unraveled and sprouted. Through wonder. True joy. Through coming home. Through no demand. Through wholeness, giving birth to wholeness. Rather than brokenness, asking our attention. And when it's brokenness asking our attention, usually we're not very responsive for good reason, because it hurts. But then there's an extra step, because there's usually an accumulated kind of exasperation or just like layer of a crust of armor or defense that we also need to navigate, soften, understand, etc. In this story of Daedalus and Icarus and Talos, Daedalus, maybe jealousy was the flaw that everybody could see. But then he was imprisoned, so he had helped Ariadne, I think, and Theseus kill the Minotaur, who was one of those monsters that had to be fed human beings every once in a while. And so, like those other stories like that. And so Ariadne helped Theseus kill the Minotaur with also the help of Daedalus, who was the architect of the labyrinth. So he wasn't like the worst person. I mean, that was a big thing. That I think it was maybe, I don't know, how many Athenian youths had to be sent into the labyrinth and were killed, eaten by the Minotaur regularly. But the king of Crete, I guess it was, who had the Minotaur in the labyrinth and killing the Athenians, and was of course very mad at Daedalus for giving up the secret of the labyrinth. And so Daedalus was imprisoned with his son on the island. And there he was. And that could be kind of like our conundrums. And so he said, well, I can't escape by land, and I can't escape by sea. And he had a good idea. I can escape by heaven. Heaven is not owned by that king. It's the one thing that's not owned. And if only he hadn't maybe taken it so literally or had gone a little more slowly. But he was desperately ready to get off the island, but in a hurry. And had that unresolved thing about killing his nephew. His nephew. But it was kind of like, almost. So what I'm saying that's using that story as a metaphor is we feel stuck, and in ways we are stuck. We can't get our family to move to the Pacific coast, and we can't get the Pacific Ocean. Maybe we wouldn't want to move to where the family is. And so finding that way that's not owned, that can't be blocked. So through the subtle and through the inner, and through what I really love in family, what I really love in home. In a lot of Rumi's poetry, there are images of knocking on the door. And so, like, doing our best to keep knocking. Like, what is it that I love in surfing? What is it that I love in family? What is this selfishness thing? Where is the freedom within this? And there is one line of Rumi's where he says, keep knocking, and the joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who's there. And another one, he says, you knock at the door of reality. Shake your wings, shake your thought wings. So that would be like where it's, oh, self-centeredness, selfishness, self, center, radiance, given, gift. You shake your thought wings, loosen your shoulders, and open. So I'll read that one again. You knock at the door of reality, shake your thought wings, loosen your shoulders, and open. So I just loved that confluence of this Rumi line and the wings and Daedalus, and like, which wings? Artificial wings or that inherent potential? Willingness to go via the subtle, willingness to go via the impossible. In that text, the Yog Vashisht, they talk about developing or discovering and learning willingness to have a vehicle that can go through any medium. a vehicle that could go, it could go on the ground, it could go on the water, it could go on the air, it could go from the inside, it could go from the outside. But our misunderstanding of challenge or things not setting themselves right immediately goes way back. And just so this gradual recovery of how fulfilling work can be, including work that we consider menial labor. Literally and inwardly. And so there's all those stories of knocking, where the seeker goes to meet the great teacher or the king, the pilgrim, whatever, goes to the gates of the palace or the temple or the cave and knocks and knocks. And they're either told, you know, just wait. We'll tell you when it's your turn, day after day, knocking. Just wait. We'll let you know when the sheikh or the guru or the whatever is ready to meet you. What were you saying? Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good
song.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. So there's a story or a teaching in this same book, Yog Vashisht, about coming to the gate and meeting the gatekeepers of liberation, of freedom. And there are four gatekeepers. One is practice. And that's sort of what I'm saying about not assuming that hard work or being told to wait is an insult. Or if it's an insult, so what? There's one Rumi poem where someone knocks on the door and the teacher is inside and the teacher says, who is it? And the student outside says, it's me. And the teacher said, ah, go away. There's no room in here for raw meat. And then the person's like wandering, like, oh. So take it as an insult if you like, and that sense of insult will be what cooks the raw meat. So they call it the fires of separation, but it's this unnecessarily taking that as an insult. And then, so after whatever, it's a year or something, it could be 100 years. And the same student goes back to the same door, and the same teacher's inside and knocks on the door. The teacher asks, who is it? And the student answers, it's you. And then there's room, come in. So that's the cooking of the willingness. That's another aspect of our willingness. When we're willing to be insulted, we're likely not to get let in the door, which is our own door. We're likely to not get through our own membrane between where I'm with the rom-com and I'm not quite feeling any other option, and this is what I'm doing, to where I really don't know. It ends up being like perseverance, yes. Which is a kind of strength. And gradually finding where the strength can come from that's self-sustaining gradually. So that burns me up less, has its own sustaining power, I have lived on the lip of insanity, wanting to know reasons, knocking on a door. opens. I've been knocking from the inside. Would it be possible to feel, just through imagining, maybe, what it would feel like to have arrived? And you might need to go back and, like, get the building blocks together. Like, what is it that if I could do this or get rid of this or get that, then I would be okay or free or perfect? Does anyone feel any? What do you feel? Any words come?
I feel I've solved my major life problem. And now I have these 10 or 12 wonderful years to play.
How is your heart?
I'm just so moved by this retreat, by your willingness to come here and go so deeply into yourselves. And I feel this place is served.
Would anyone else like to say anything?
I just had a flash that the, like to call it the wound, would still be there. You know, mm-hmm. that having arrived wouldn't mean, kind of in the theme of what if it was all just convenient and easy, that where's the growth or where's the...
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. That cool. In that spirit, kind of have that, like, oh. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would actually go away.
Cool. Yeah, great. That's so important. And I'm not sure I really touched on that. That was a really important part of that. That the double craving, the deep learning level that we could listen to, or the, like, freaked out but don't have traction, partly because I'm freaked out and I'm assuming the freak out is something wrong, level of craving. That... whether or not, let's say, if there was a big flaw, that everyone would be happy if it would disintegrate. There's still, we could call it the self, or we could call it the source. We could call it a deeper nature. There could be and can be full realization. Being really in touch with what is untouched. And so sometimes there are, I mentioned earlier, a Korean Zen master who he advised us not to practice like putting a big rock on grass, crushing grass, like trying to be equanimous. And he also has a great line. He said, for that person who kind of maybe is gifted or lucky and all of the above and is realized. At first, so the winds have ceased, but the waves still surge, is the translation. And so tracking, how is my flaw going? How is my disintegration of flaw going, is an example of selfishness, self-centeredness, self-absorption that doesn't have the bigger picture. It could just be the momentum from all that was before without any life in it.
Mm-hmm. Self-concern that caused the problem is trying to solve the problem.
Is, yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, it's like that this other quotation that was the first thing I wrote on my page of notes for today, and I was kind of like, I really don't totally get how that fits in here, but it so fits the way that you talked about the flaw. And it's a line from William Stafford, the poem about the antelope and that what's wrong with the grass. I must be willingly fallible to deserve a place in the realm where miracles happen.
Say that again?
Mm-hmm. I must be willingly fallible to deserve a place in the realm where miracles happen. And I just love that, because our willingness to be liberated is one thing that might, you know, get our mouth watering, our self-absorbed mouth. That'll be great, you know. I'm going to be so liberated. Nobody can touch me. But to be willingly fallible, to deserve a place in the realm where miracles happen. So it's also the giving up. Like, it's impossible. Like, the surf is here, the family's there. And my being is asking for both. And with my, what I know and what I can do, like, that's the end of that story. That sucks. The end. Jiu. Let's hear it, really.
Lao, L-A-O.
Lao.
And Jiu, J-I, that helps.
Yeah. Jiu. Jiu.
Lao.
Which, and what that's saying something about is the Lao self and Jiu self. Which is like the fear and love, time and timeless. Yeah. And so that shift of taking it as a given, something given, rather than something kind of taken away, or something I've done wrong, or whatever, like, given. Sometimes to myself, like, I wouldn't say this if I were giving a Dharma talk, I wouldn't say it out loud. To myself, I say something like it, the feeling of, this is so challenging that life must feel like I'm up for this. I must have more than think I have in me. And that doesn't take away the way it hurts, but it's a different, like, it can hurt and bring us back to the wonderful, like the way wonder can move us so subtly, like the feeling of surfing.
Does that speak to the wound that Karen mentioned that wouldn't get healed by easy solutions or convenience taking the giant rock onto the grass. That you're saying the hurt, actually being willing to feel the hurt. Mm-hmm. That's what the rom-coms are covering, and the addictions,
mm-hmm.
to me, and whatever else is convenient.
Yeah.
So.
And then the really cool thing, is willingness to feel the hurt, feel what hurts, feel hurt. That's like that crosses our fear membrane, and then we're in. And then it hurts differently, and it's not only about hurt. There's so much else.
It hurts as it crosses the threshold of the small constricting heart.
And opening hurts.
Yeah.
Circulation coming back in hurts. All kinds of things hurt.
But from that slightly, a little bit more open heart, suddenly there isn't such an attraction to perfection, that what's here isn't
exactly.
There.